You're listening to the Reversing Climate Change podcast by the team at NORI, the carbon removal marketplace. This is a show about the innovators and entrepreneurs developing solutions to climate change.
Hello and welcome to the Reversing Climate Change podcast with NORI. I'm Ross Kenyon. I'm one of the co-founders of NORI, which is a carbon removal marketplace based in Seattle, Washington. Today I have with me Tito Jankowski, a veteran of the show many, many times. I think third or fourth time at this point, maybe even more. Coming live from COP in Dubai. He's the CEO of Air Miners. Hi, Tito.
Hey, Ross. Hey, everybody.
You didn't expect that intro to end so rapidly, and yet it descended upon us rapidly.
Here we are. I'm in Dubai, Ross.
I've never been. What's it like over there?
It's cool. It's my first time too. First time to the Middle East, and it's definitely it's culturally very different from the West Coast of California. It's got, the people are super welcoming. It's a very like tourist friendly town. Definitely some like, I've been reading articles about like how to think about Dubai, and it's like, it's really this like convergence of the place that, many different cultures come together. I heard that the population is something like 60% Indian. So I had some excellent like sambar and idli for breakfast. That's what it's like. It's kind of a convergent, touristy, Las Vegas-y kind of place.
60%. I didn't realize it was that high. I knew there were many Indians there, but I didn't realize it was that high. I'm always really interested in microstates, and I always love visiting the Luxembourgs and Liechtensteins of the world. I'm just like, how did this not get subsumed into some bigger political organization at some point? Same thing with Qatar and UAE, and just like, I need to look into that. I've always meant to. I imagine it's some royal family somehow was friends with the British or something, and then they like the. As it happened in Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Do you have any idea? Blank stare. No idea.
I've got, I'm remembering that you are like a historian type person. So the story that I got, so I went to two, like cultural exhibits on Dubai and the history of, the UAE. And my understanding coming away from those, that limited exposure, admittedly is, it was basically there were a bunch of different states called the Emirates. At a certain point, they all joined together and became the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah, but I think Emir just means prince in Arabic, right? So it's the same thing as being a principality like Monaco or Liechtenstein or these other weird little. So, anyways, this is not about COP. This is me indulging in my own weird world historical obsessions. So why don't we talk about climate change? As is our mandate, Tito. Can you explain what COP is? I often find myself mentally blocked whenever there's big convergences of international things, especially if there's a UN tinge to it. I find I just do not process the information successfully. What even is COP? What does it stand for? How many have there been? Why does it exist? Help us.
Yeah, I definitely admit a bit of a feeling of there's that Andy Dwyer meme that's like, I don't know X, and at this point, I'm too embarrassed to ask. So I get that vibe with COP. I'm here. It's COP 28, so it's the 28th COP. It is COP is the Conference of Parties, and it's a global climate convening of state level, government level negotiators who are getting things together on the climate side, and at this COP, they're discussing the phase out or phase down of fossil fuels as one of the topics that's on the table and apparently still under negotiation and being talked about potentially even at this moment. It sounds like the negotiators doing this work they work off the record Chatham House rules, and they are working to make it happen.
I think one of the reasons why I find it to be a bit confusing is I also am seeing lots and lots of friends, acquaintances, contacts, just people I see on LinkedIn. They're in various, I'm in the Canada room. I'm in the Ecuador room. I'm like, what relation does that have to the real people doing real things? And how much of this is everyone just shows up with their own dog and pony show, trying to say we're actually important too. Is that what you're doing there? Is it you also bringing in your carbon removal dog and pony show?
The good news is I'm not in any of the rooms. I'm not in the
You're in the hall.
There's the blue zone, which is where my understanding is the negotiations happen. And you can get observer status on these negotiations. You can apply and get accepted to that. And that puts you in the rooms. But the people that are doing the work there are the negotiators. There's also presentations that happen in the blue zone. I've been in the green zone, which is the go online and a week before COP and sign up for tickets. So I have plumbed the depths of the green zone. So I can talk more about that. But the blue zone is kind of this much higher security place where the negotiations around COP actually happen. And then as you can imagine, when you bring together the world's climate leaders, there's kind of this halo effect of like, well, a lot of other people, myself included, decide, hey, that's a place that we want to be for these 2 weeks as well. So that's where blue zone comes in and green zone. And then there's all these other even conferences that happen in around COP, simply because you really have this hot core of climate action in the middle of it. So that's the blue zone, green zone, and kind of the satellite events.
So is it safe to say that you're a camp follower? Is that what
camp follow? That's it. That's it. I'm a groupie. Groupie. Yeah. No, I don't know what a camp follower is.
It's like the service providers and prostitutes who would follow armies around just to be like in the mix and to make money off of armies in the field.
There you go. Yes.
That's
something
in the green zone. Okay, sorry to be okay, so carbon removal, the UN, various bodies, there's been discussions over what kind of carbon removal will be acceptable by UN standard bodies. That's a big deal. That could impact quite a lot. I'm not sure how much. So I'm not sure if the UN does something extremely affirmative for carbon removal, how powerful that would be. If it does something that is not tech neutral, that favors some tech and disfavors others, what the ripple effects might that be relative to something like the Brussels effect of what happens in the EU with GDPR has a huge implication for everyone else, no matter where you are in the world and how you process data. I never know how much of that to rate quite exactly, but carbon removal is being talked about in these very fancy, high rung, high status kind of places. What's been the vibe of the carbon removal scene at COP, of which I'm seeing there's tons of, I'm surprised I'm not there because there's so many people I know that are there representing carbon removal.
Yeah. So the vibe of carbon removal at COP is I set up a WhatsApp group for everybody that's working on carbon removal who is on the ground at COP. And we have 61 people in the group. I've added, as we've gone to parties, people are adding, you know, new people they meet who are working in carbon removal. So the group has grown from one person, whatever it was, Monday last week. So that really represents like the carbon removal community that's here. In terms of kind of the official discussions, you mentioned the UN, people probably remember signing or at least seeing the air miners letter to the UN that we put out over the summer. And that was after I visited the UN negotiations going on in Bonn, where they were talking about really getting into the details of how carbon gets removed. And we issued this letter that was, look, like we need to set goals around how much carbon gets removed, but like, please lead us open as possible around like how the carbon gets removed, being agnostic to the method. And my understanding is that part of the urgency around that UN meeting was because that was kind of queuing up the discussions. Some of the decisions were made at the UN would then be carried over into this COP conversation. So all these kind of policy level discussions and negotiations are all linked together, and kind of step by step they move things forward from the discussion at the UN now coming into COP. That said, what I have seen at COP as the like latest draft of the agreement seems to include carbon removal. It says something carbon removal including carbon capture, which is like, oh wait, we're like, you know, it's kind of mixing together decarbonization and carbon removal as kind of the same thing. So that's where it's at. Like, the negotiations aren't finished, so you know, a lot of that is still up in the air as to what actually kind of the end result is. But being on the ground here, there's a lot of people looking at carbon removal. There's a lot of people interested in carbon removal and looking at it from a policy standpoint, from an investment standpoint, from a startup standpoint. We have, there's four carbon removal companies that have been through the AM Miners Launchpad program that I've seen here. They're on the WhatsApp group too. It's been, carbon removal has a ton of events. Like you saw, there was that, the carbonremovals.org website. They were awesome, putting together everything carbon removal related at COP. So I use that all the time for checking out like which events were where and what was happening. So there's a ton of carbon removal stuff happening kind of in and around COP. Although in, like I said, like that hot core of like actual negotiation, I don't know how much carbon removal is actually getting discussed within that, but there's plenty of events in the blue zone. There's plenty of events in the green zone and satellite event about carbon removal and for carbon removal people. So it's certainly a place to be this week. And that's probably why I wanted to speak with you today, was to encourage people as they're thinking about COP next year. You know, if it's something that you've thought about doing, start setting your sights for it. It's really a global convening of climate leaders, and encourage anybody listening to this, whether you're new to carbon removal or you're kind of on the periphery and you're curious and you want to contribute. I mean, it's open to anybody can come in and get tickets and plan ahead and you can be part of what's happening here.
I like doing a show in media rust like this, though. And plenty of shows, I'm sure, are going to do the post, you know, the post-op here, post-mortem, if you will. And I'm sure we'll probably end up doing something like that, too, if Carbon Removal Newsroom doesn't. But it's nice to just get a sense of the boots on the ground, what happened at the grassroots level, rather than just what's going to come out of the blue zone? Is that the fancy pants? Is blue zone?
Blue zone. That's it. Yeah, the stuff that you hear on the radio is like, you know, that's all the official stuff. And that's, again, what I wanted to share from is like, I'm not the official stuff. I decided to come to COP last Monday. So, you know, it wasn't like planning ahead and being in the blue zone. It was, hey, this is the place to be for what's next for air miners, what's next for carbon removal. And this has been my experience diving head first.
Last time we spoke, we were in Detroit for TED Countdown, and you can agree or disagree with this, but the attendees, I thought overall, were more mainstream environmental people, that the kinds of conversations I ended up finding myself in were, should carbon removal exist? Is direct air capture a scam by oil and gas? Do we need to be doing this at all? Can't we just plant trees? And I was disappointed that the level of discourse was in some cases quite low, at least for someone who is seasoned in carbon removal. It was sort of surreal in that way to go. It felt like going backwards. Does carbon removal in Dubai with the COP, does it feel a bit more sophisticated, or do you find yourself in rooms sometimes where it almost feels like the conversations around carbon removal a decade ago and we've never advanced?
Let's see. So my experience at COP has mostly been one-on-one meetings. So I haven't been doing panels and speaking and hearing rooms full of people. So just in terms of that context, what I've found is, if anything, Ross, after that experience at TED and listening to Al Gore's speech, I really got into the weeds on my own understanding of kind of how to listen to other people and their understanding of carbon removal. And I would say across the board, there is a general need or opportunity for alignment around that carbon removal is necessary. That is where, if I think back to those TED climate conversations I had, if I go back to the speech from Al Gore, it's unclear to me, you know, in those conversations, are we aligned that carbon removal is needed in addition to decarbonization? So in a sense, what I'm saying is, it feels like I've leveled up in my ability to to talk to people. So they're like, yeah, look, if people aren't on board with carbon removal being necessary, we're not talking about how to do it then. We're not talking about, oh, do you like direct air capture or oceans or soils? We're talking about, do you think carbon removal is necessary? And so I've certainly been able to change how I engage in those conversations. So for me, it's very different from the experience of Ted Klein, where it's kind of going into a conversation that, yeah, it just wasn't at its core aligned around like, well, do we actually need this? If we need it, then we can talk about how to do it and how much is needed. But if you think we don't need carbon removal, then all of this is silly. Like anything to do with taking carbon out of the air, if you don't think carbon removal is needed, then all the stuff in the ocean is silly. All the stuff in rocks and back is all, you know, it's all a waste of time. And so being able to really see that in conversations and say like, okay, so like, where are you at on like, do we need carbon removal? So that's a bit of a longer answer, and I'm getting plenty of conversations around, do we need carbon removal and why? So I've had conversations with people, working in different areas of climate, whether it's, energy or decarbonization, really being curious with people about like, where are they at on whether we need carbon removal or not.
I respect that. And we need it. I think there's a tendency for people who work inside of a field to drift towards inside baseball rather than outward evangelization, or that word's pejorative and kind of tainted, but, or just trying to reach people who don't already know the good news. See, now I'm just going further and further into the evangelical territory and framing here. I had a friend once upon a time. I haven't spoken to him in several years, but he was an actual Leninist, which is fairly rare to find in the wild. They're out there, but they're not super common. But our conversations were always so basic, and you have such little practice with people who disagree that much, where you'd be like, well, yeah, prices are important. If you don't have prices, you don't know where things should go. It's like, well, a computer could do that. And you're like, well, parliamentary democracy is clearly important because we have groups that see things differently. No, actually, that's not true. Like, what do you do when people need to coexist together, but they don't actually share the same vision of the good life? Well, they're going to learn it, or they're going to be re-educated. And you're like, so like, how do you exactly communicate? I felt like those assumptions were so different. And then sometimes I have to refresh myself too. I feel out of practice even making the case for why carbon removal is necessary. So if you're out there and you're listening and you feel passionate about that, that is an area where once you've been in this long enough, you can lose practice unless you're out there engaging all the time. And I think you could probably add a huge amount of value by being good at that.
Yep, absolutely. You can add a value, and you can grow your own understanding. I've learned a ton by engaging with people around like, how do they think about decarbonization? How do they think about carbon removal? And it's changed my own understanding of what it is we're up to as air miners and people removing carbon from the sky. So wherever people are at in that, I mean, a year ago, I used to describe that like my role in carbon removal was that my doorway was just like packed full of people who were rabid about carbon removal, and like I wanted to talk to them and work with them. And now today I'd say somewhat differently. Like I'm going out and talking to people about like, hey, you know, where are you at on carbon removal? What are your concerns about carbon removal? If you remember our discussion about the Kiloton Fund and doing investing in carbon removal startups, and that all came from talking to 30 investors in carbon removal, instead of saying, you know, I'm evangelizing carbon removal, get on board. It was, hey, what's your biggest concern about carbon removal? And it turned out they all had the same concern, which was, I get that it's going to be a big industry, but I don't know how to invest right now because it's unclear how real the market is. It's unclear how quickly it's going to grow and how profitable it is. Right. So like by engaging in those conversations and like the reality of it, you can really come across like opportunities to actually make things that work. And that's what we're here for. That's what Air Miners is here for, is a stable planet and thriving human civilizations, right? So under that umbrella, like if somebody's, you know, got ideas about how to make things work, like I'm in for that conversation. And even if it's, you know, if it's a concern about investing, it's like, cool, well then let's figure out a solution to that. And now we have coming out of that type of conversation is the Kiloton Fund. which is a solution to for investors that are concerned about the profitability or the growth and the profit margins or the dilution of early stage urban rural companies. I said profitability there twice, which is like, it's so important. But yeah, like that's, again, by engaging these conversations, that's how we build solutions. And like, we're here for solutions, you know? Enjoying conversations of all types like that.
Sounds like you've leveled up in listening, which is because I think at least the way that I subconsciously presented at the beginning of this conversation was that there are people who disagree, they have wrong information. And if we go to them and present correct information, we will win. And it turns out, I don't think the human mind really does work like that at all. I think by being a better listener and making people feel like their concerns are valid and heard, and in many cases, they are valid too. I think if the assumption is that oil and gas is very involved in DAC and we can't trust oil and gas companies, therefore, like that is a syllogism is tight. And if you accept all of those premises, why shouldn't you follow the conclusion as well? I think you're obligated to logically. So I think if you're able to hear that and try to find out if there are ways where, well, what if there was a DAC company that actually forswore oil and gas involvement? Does that change anything for you? What if there was something else, some other governance mechanism? I think, or even just being able to listen to that concern may in some ways make people feel like they're not just going to be run over by technological progress that may or may not actually have an impact on climate. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I wrote a newsletter about this after our experience at TED Climate. And it was that I have like two questions to slice through conversations and not like to, I guess slicing sounds sort of like aggressive, but like to just for my own understanding, like to kind of really get what somebody's saying, which is two questions. Do you think carbon rule is necessary for a stable climate? And like how much, by when, how do we do it? And I've that whole like, you know, direct air capture is a excuse for the oil industry or sort of stuff. I found that's often coming from a place of like not actually aligned on that carbon rule is necessary. Because if carbon rule is necessary, then you're probably gonna be talking about like, oh, well, then we need to do enhanced rock weathering and soils and ocean-based carbon rule. And like maybe DAC is at the bottom of your list. That's fine. But that's very different than being like, oh, like DAC doesn't matter. Like, well, wait, that if we need to remove carbon, then like DAC is somewhere in the list of priorities, you know? And that's being as like, you know, neutral in my own like excitement or enthusiasm or lack of it around DAC. But it's just, you know, it's if we're agreed on that carbon rule is necessary, it really does change those conversations about like, you know, DAC does come up. Like a lot of people know about DAC. Many people think that carbon rule is direct air capture. Like it's the same, right? And so I start talking about like enhanced rock weathering and ocean and soils, and it's people are kind of like that. That's when it goes back to like, well, what are we talking about when we're talking about carbon removal? Anyway, I written that on my newsletter. It was a helpful tool that I built for myself about these two questions that helped me understand where people are coming from.
Seems like a good way to frame, probably just to ground yourself so you're not running people over and losing sight of how to actually have a human conversation. Probably
Also totally
changes doing it in person too. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. What?
Yeah. Oh, doing in person is good. Yeah. But yeah, being in conversation, I found myself even on like Airminer Slack, like moving more towards like setting up calls with people rather than like trying to discuss stuff over text. I'm really grateful for all the people that are at COP to like who ask those questions and have this, you know, understanding. It's like, oh yeah, this is cool. One shift in my own understanding. Well, I could share about that, or we could talk about something else. But
go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my own understanding. I was talking with a professor at MIT tonight about this. Because you go back to like, well, do we need to remove carbon from the air? And actually, there's a question up above that, which is like, do we need to remove carbon from the air? Like, well, why? And it's all around like temperature stability. And so, or like temperature control rather, right? And so for air miners, our goal is we say greenhouse gas removal, which includes carbon removal, right? Because like there's other greenhouse gases, which kind of is this pointer towards like, hey, like, why do we care about carbon dioxide again? And it's like, oh, because it causes warming, which is like temperature increase, right? So just something shifting in my understanding around like this kind of category around like climate intervention or temperature control, but kind of this umbrella of like carbon removal fits into that. Methane removal also fits into that. Other ideas for how to change the temperature also fit into that. And that's kind of fundamentally what we're talking about when we're talking about carbon removal is like controlling the temperature. So for me in all these conversations, what I've found is there's maybe like another kind of step up from like, you know, why carbon removal matters, which is temperature control.
Man, I have so many thoughts on that. On the one hand, I almost don't really care that much on the taxonomy. Just tell me like, what's the thing we call it so that everyone is on the same page. I think the word games of what actually is carbon removal. Yeah. Should this be some bigger category? Is it, yeah, greenhouse gas removal? Is it carbon dioxide removal rather than carbon removal? But carbon removal can also include methane. You're just tell me what to say and I'll say it. I don't even care in some cases. Temperature control is an interesting one. I think for PR reasons, that has such a strong geoengineering connotation to me, where it does feel like that global thermostat. Can we set the temperature of the earth into someone who's a bit more prophet than wizard, a bit more green than a bit more engineered? It sounds like Dominion, and we'll face some opposition. But I do broadly have that sci-fi David Grinspoon orientation of humanity essentially needs to learn how to manage the global climate because it's too late not to intervene in it. So we need to learn how to intervene for good, or we probably won't make it to permanent civilizational status. Right? I don't know.
Yeah. We call it temperature management, right? I mean, we're every 9 days, we put another billion tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
Wow. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Like we're doing this. Like we're adding a billion tons of carbon dioxide.
That's sort of like accidental, incidental byproduct.
I get in the car and I push the pedal.
Well, it's manslaughter versus first degree murder, right? So like, do you want to escalate to having a sort of direct planning, like indirectly, because cyanobacteria indirectly influenced the global thermostat, you know? Does it have culpability? Once you own that responsibility of doing so, the pressure of never being able to walk away again and the hubris of humanity deciding that, I guess if you do it in a mature way, it could be great. And we've been doing it in an immature way, and that's not great. So maybe if we could mature at the same time that we develop the tech to do this. God, can we do this though? There's nothing new under the sun. We're sort of fallen, depraved beings. So are we going to be able to figure out the governance mechanisms for literally the entire planet?
I'm in Dubai, baby. That's
You're in Dubai, baby.
Right? Like, is it that's where happen? That governance conversation is happening. It's happening right now. It's happening all around the planet, and it's happening most concentrated right here. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, you are here. You were there, I guess I should say. And sounds like you see a lot of reasons for hope, potentially. Feels good to be there. I don't want to feed that.
Yeah.
Do you actually feel
enjoying
that?
Enjoying this. I feel hope. I feel curiosity. Like I'm learning about the process and where it's at. I'm seeing what's it like. I mean, it's here in Dubai. It's in terms of where do we need to be to have a planet-wide conversation. Dubai is the place to do it in 2023. Sounds like it's going to be in Azerbaijan next year in 2024.
Why are they just going to all the oil places? That Baku is like also one of the most intensely oil-driven municipalities probably in the world. Why?
Yeah, there's some. There's a COP process for deciding where the location is. I don't know the details of it, but somehow it's that's
you would think they would choose someplace less controversial given how much flack they got for the choice for this year. They're going to two like petro states essentially in a row.
Yeah. They are.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get nothing to say.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, I mean, where else, where would we be better?
Somewhere I don't know,
where
I guess
oil companies can't hear us or something. Like, I just don't, I'm like, cool, great. Let's go right into the conversation. Let's have the conversation here.
Yeah, I guess where could you go? I guess there are even places in the rainforest are getting cut down for oil exploration. The U.S. itself, a petro state, given our oil and gas industry too.
Yeah.
Is having it at like the first step of the process better than having it in the suburbs of Houston where the refineries are? Like, does it, or where it's consumed? Does it even matter? Maybe not, but you know that's gonna poke people. I don't think many people know about Baku and
we're
the way that
I
just talked about
planet.
It. Unless they learn, they're gonna know about it. What's that? Sorry.
Yeah. You said, I mean, in terms of poking people, like, yeah, this is the future of the planet, right? This is like a civilization scale challenge. And so we need places where civilization agrees to come together. And this is where it is.
Yeah. And I'm wondering too, counterintuitively, if you invite the UAE and to host COP, maybe you get increased buy-in or movement from them in the same way, like maybe the Azeri state is maybe it doesn't, because the interpretation of this is, oh, COP is corrupt, it's clearly just favoring these oil nations. But what if it's a way of having them much more prominently figure in and show them that there is an honorable way to proceed? That is like, that is the silver lining charitable best case, right? Is that possible?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, every taxi in the country is driving people around for COP, and some of them are having discussions about this stuff. And people that work in the different ministries of the government and such are engaged in this conversation. Whereas if it's happening somewhere else, then only a couple of those people end up going. So it's possible that Dubai is the best place for the COP discussion this year. And that's a idea that's been kind of growing as I've been here. It's like, okay, we're here. This is where the discussion is happening. We can't ignore the role of oil and gas in fossil fuels and in the climate. And so, yeah, let's go to Dubai. Talk about it. Work it out.
It's one of those cases where I never know if I'm, selling myself a bridge in Montana or whatever, or if I'm like, should I be cynical or optimistic? Is this a really smart decision that I don't know enough about to speculate upon? Or is this as bad as critics say, or somewhere in between? I never quite know, but surely it has to work. Surely it must result in progress. I don't know.
Possible it does. I think I've said this at the previous Air Miners Town Hall, but pessimism and optimism are the same thing. They're kind of a fixed view about the future, and the future is unknown, right? If you ever tried to like do any sort of prediction about the future, it is just really challenging. And so, we get to hold on to things and say, like, we think this is possible. And I think it's possible that we look back and say Dubai was really the best place for moving the climate conversation forward. I mean, the discussions are finalizing. They are not finalized, but going in, there was the possibility of coming out with a phase out of fossil fuels. I mean, let's say 2 weeks from now, we had world governments aligned for a plan for phasing out fossil fuels. That'd be something. And that's what's happening here. That discussion is happening here.
Sounds like it could be one of those tarot readings. You're like, oh, you drew the King of Cups or whatever. And that could either mean a death in the family or rebirth. It's like, one of the two. You're like, okay, I don't know. I guess that's, yeah. Or like, what's the, there's another one too, that the Chinese character for crisis is what, opportunity and chaos or something like that. What is it? Opportunity and danger, I think it is. Whatever. I like the tarot one better. But is that, that's just all of these things too. It's either everything or nothing.
Yeah. Either.
Is it everything or nothing, Tito?
We get to choose. And it's possible that it's everything.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, if you don't want to, I just don't like waiting too much on the decisions of too many things so far outside of my control. So if you're listening and you're not with the cool kids in the right zone, what are some things you can do in the meantime here? I'm sure if you're, are you still reaching out for investors or carbon removal startups or something else, someone listening that wants to get involved with you, how should they do so?
Oh, AirMiner is boot up. They're the big one. Like if you are scouring the web to understand carbon removal and you're kind of listening to a podcast here or there, AirMiner's boot up is this introductory 101 style. It's not a course, but it's a 6-week sprint on carbon removal. We match you with like 10 other people who are kind of like you. They want to learn about carbon removal. And then over 6 weeks, twice a week, you really dig into every aspect of carbon removal. I got to, and when you graduate, you earn this AirMiner boot up badge. I've got one in a pocket somewhere here, but I have too many pockets. But I had brought two because, actually, no, I don't have any here. I gave them away.
I saw you unite the people with them on LinkedIn.
Yes. Yeah. So, Therabeth Broccoli from NASDAQ is a graduate from Boot Up. She's now their carbon lead, and her Boot Up badge had gotten lost in the mail. And so I had met her in San Francisco at a meetup, and she was like, yeah, like, where's my badge? And so when I found out I was going to COP and that she was going to COP too, I was like, I'm going to bring her the badge. And so I ended up handing it off to Helen and Bray, who's the head of policy for Puro. And then so Helen then delivered the badge to Sarah Beth. And yeah, so that's the power of boot up and the power of getting that badge is like, you know, it's a way to level up your understanding of carbon removal. It's not only for people that are new to carbon removal, by the way. There's people that have worked in carbon removal. They've worked for, there was somebody that was really deep in Climeworks working on director capture, and they took boot up because they wanted to better understand, how's the rest of this stuff work? And I would encourage you, if you're wondering how these other carbon removal solutions work and you're working on one particular one, I encourage you to dive into boot up because it goes back to that common purpose, which is we're here to remove billions of tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. We get to discover together how to do it, and somebody else that's doing a different how is right there with you in pursuit of that we actually get it done. And there's a lot you can learn from. This is part of the core of Launchpad, which is our startup accelerator program, which is director capture company can learn a ton from enhanced rock weathering companies, who can learn a ton from soil companies, who can learn a ton from ocean-based companies.
I've been thinking of doing boot up because I've not done it previously, although I've certainly referenced the curriculum countless times. There's a lot of great information gathered. Siobhan was saying that she wanted to go back and retake it. And I was thinking, yeah, I've been in carbon removal for 6.5 years, thereabouts. Pretty long.
Yeah.
But
time.
Honestly, when you're working in this space, you have less time, unless you're working on it directly, to constantly be studying all this stuff. I think having a more structured environment would do so and would probably make me a bit more well-rounded. Tom Waits has some line where he says he plays different instruments because your hands are like dogs and they're always going back to what they know. So if you just play a guitar, you'll play the same couple of things over and over. I'm like, maybe I should go back and do boot up with Siobhan and just make that happen. And also, I like that you framed it too, that it wasn't just if you're new to carbon removal. It's also people that have been working in this space who maybe they become a little path dependent. Maybe they've become a little too focused on their own thing and they're losing sight of what others are doing in adjacent fields. I think that that actually is pretty good advice.
Yeah, exactly. I encourage people to look at, like, what you want is a balanced climate, and it's worth diving into boot up of, you know, especially if you've been working really hard on one particular area. I mean, it's just, it's ripe with opportunity. Yeah.
It's never too late to go back to school, it sounds like. Well,
yeah. So are you going to take boot up, Ross?
When is it?
The next ones, we run it about every 2 months. The next one starts in early January. You have to sign up before January 1st. At the bootup.airminers.org for people to type in. You go to bootup.airminers. And we're doing a campaign on Instagram as well. So you can, if you're on Instagram, you can follow us at airminers_CDR. And Jason has been putting together a campaign that encourages people to apply to boot up and join boot up. When I say apply, it's like it's signing up. It's not like everybody who wants to take boot up can take boot up. And so Jason and Luisa and Aaron have been working on an Instagram campaign. Bootup.airminers.org. Sign up. So yeah, that's the next one, Ross. What I'm getting from you is, sounds like you did boot up. It would, that like Tom Waite style thing, it would like open you up to different instruments and different ways of thinking as you're writing songs and playing songs.
Pretty much, yeah. I think having new ways of seeing, or just a reminder of what all is happening. I feel like I'm less numerate than I would like, and I'm also less comfortable with actual science than I would like. So I think being in an environment where some of that was defanged a little bit might be a nice way to give myself some encouragement and pushing through some of those self-limitations here. But also just, there's so much that has happened in that time, and I have not adequately kept up with all of it, which I don't want to sound like I'm down on myself. I think that's just an accurate representation of being a human with lots of different things competing for your time constantly. And it's no longer a really small field like when we started, where you could know everyone personally. Now there's hundreds and hundreds of companies, as we are very fond of saying, which is great. But yeah, a little refresher, polish off some of the edges that I've allowed to grow dull could be useful. I can't commit right now on the show, but if you want, we could certainly do another one where we could drag some of the listeners of this show over and say, do you want to be in a cohort with Ross? Then sign
up. Oh, cool. Oh, that's awesome. We would love to do that, like a get the gang together kind of thing. That sounds cool. Yeah, totally. I mean, the nature of carbon removal, the edges are expanding faster than ever. I mean, there are thousands of people developing these solutions now, and that means that the solution space of possible solutions is being explored that much faster, and I love digging into the details of how one particular solution works, because it's just, I find that like the deeper I get on any one particular thing, somehow, I can't explain it, but somehow it seems to give me like a deeper understanding of everything. So for example, with the Kiloton Fund, I've been talking in a different way to carbon credit buyers. And just like that depth of experience has changed the conversations with startups, understanding like what buyers are really, really looking for changes how we coach startup teams. It changes how I think about people in boot up, like what they're going to be learning about carbon markets and how these things might form. So yeah, boot up.
Okay. Thanks for
and the get the update. Badge.
I want
yeah. Good update.
I would like a badge. Yeah. Thanks for coming. It's cool to hear about what's happening at COP. Nice to hear it just from someone who's out there mucking around with the other carbon removal people there, gate crashers. Just kidding. That's nice that you guys are doing that and trying to make that conversation a powerful thing where you can. And yeah, thanks for all the leadership you have in carbon removal. Air Miners has touched seemingly everyone within the space, has made their career more accessible, more near at hand. So thanks. I'm I'm a huge fan, as you know.
All right, Ross, let's get to it. I'll see you in Azerbaijan.
Yeah, buy my ticket to Baku as we speak. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you have a lovely day, and I'll see you in Air Miners.
Hey, Ross.
Thank you so much for listening. If you could please subscribe and give us a great rating and review on Apple Podcasts or a rating on Spotify, that'd be much appreciated. It helps us get our content out to more people. You can sign up for our newsletter at nori.com, follow us on social media, and we will catch you next time.